Committee on Education for Monday, May 23rd, 2005, and open a work session on SB 5584, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. It is the intent of the chair today not to move this bill. We will go through a number of recommendations from the Legislative Fiscal Office. We will also go through performance measures, and we will try to get committee acceptance of those at the end of this process. But this bill will not come back to us until we've settled agreement on the actual amount for opportunity grants. That's the biggest outstanding issue within this bill. There is one request that I just received, Mr. Bender. If you could just briefly go over what the House special or the House subcommittee approved today.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The House subcommittee of the Special Committee on Budget, the Subcommittee on Education and Natural Resources, had a work session on their version of this agency budget, their bill, which is House Bill 5113. They made a recommendation to the full House Special Budget Committee to approve all of the recommendations that you'll see here and we'll be considering today. Plus, additionally, they did approve a funding amount for the Oregon Opportunity Grant at the level in both the House and Senate co-chair budgets. So they went that additional step and did make a decision at this point on that funding level. That decision was to reduce the amount in the governor's recommended budget by $27 million and to delay the establishment of the expansion of the program to serve all full-time eligible students and to expand to part-time students until the second year of the budget.
Also, my understanding is that their version of the budget did not actually increase the amount of the grants in the second year either.
That is correct. It maintained the existing methodology of having the grant amount equal to 11% of cost of attendance. So the only increases are due to increases in the cost of attendance.
And the second thing that they also did was they adopted an additional budget note, which is not in your recommendations today, which I think some people have talked to me about already, and they may have talked to other committee members about.
Correct. There was a budget note directing the commission on how to administer the increased funding for the opportunity grant that basically described to the commission the expectation of what the funding should achieve. And that budget note is not included in your recommendation because you are not dealing with the issue this today as to what the funding level is to be.
Any questions about what the House did today?
Brings me up to speed, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yes.
Sorry, I missed a portion of it. Just my overall view is I had always supported the governor's portion of this budget and didn't support either the House or the Senate portion of the budget. I went down through the list. Some things I like from the governor, some things I like from the Senate, some things I like from the House. And this is the one that I basically like the governor's. So now, what the House?
The House approved the House's version, which is about a $27 million reduction from the governor's. My intent today, as I said just a few minutes ago, actually, was we will work the LFO recommendations and try to get acceptance of those, but we are not dealing today with the amount of the opportunity grants, and we're not going to pass the budget out today. So that the major issue that's out there will not be settled today in committee. And any action that you take today will not preclude you taking an action on that major issue. We're dealing primarily with adjustments in administrative costs and with a review of the performance measure recommendations from LFO. Not with the actual amount of the opportunity grants. That's for a later day.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Going back up here, as I understand, there's an issue with tuition freeze, opportunity grants. Universities basically coming and talking about enrollment growth. There's kind of a three-legged stool out there. Am I getting that information right, or is this just another rumor that's going around the building?
I think that's pretty accurate. There might even be a fourth leg to that stool. because I have almost all of my budgets, except for the Department of Ed, tied up in an internal discussion of community colleges, higher ed, Oregon Student Assistance Commission, and different aspects. And that's going to make it a little bit difficult determining what we can do until we get agreement and get a clearance to actually turn some of these budgets out. But after a point, though, we will get down to the point where we only have four or five budgets left in the committee. And hopefully at a point we'll only have two or three left.
Eventually you'll have none left.
Yes, eventually.
Is that in August?
So with that, I'll ask Mr. Bender. He has a fairly lengthy presentation to go through and to go through all these recommendations. And if there is a time during that when the director wants to comment, if she would please indicate that she does. And we will just try to get through this and get all these items on the table, and hopefully we'll be able to get acceptance today of these recommendations so that when the budget does come back, the principal issue that we'll be dealing with what is the amount of the opportunity grants and how are they to be distributed.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I just wanted to note for the record that this is probably the second time today that Mr. Bender has had to go through this very lengthy discussion. And it's unfortunate that we have to waste our staff's time in this manner. It would be much better to have it given in one presentation so they can get other work done.
Well, Senator Walker, sometimes when I talk to LFO staff, I want to ask, are you working on the House version of the budget, the Senate version of the budget, or the actual version that we know will ultimately be adopted?
Yeah, I really want to applaud them being able to hold it together.
I appreciate Senator Walker's comment and want to be identified with her concern. But additionally, on the issue of the funding level for the opportunity grants, not knowing at this point what that decision-making process is going to look like that leads to determining the number, I want to go on record encouraging that there be as much transparency as possible in discussing, deciding what that number is and how it is arrived at. And again, I'm sitting here not knowing, because this process continues to unfold every day, what that might look like, but let's just make sure it's transparent for the public, not only those who are here with us every day, but the public who may need a heads up and who may want to weigh in on how we're making that decision.
I think we will try. I will try my best to lend some transparency to that discussion. I'm not always at the center of that discussion, to be honest. But I think that it's pretty clear that we are not passing out what is the Senate chair's version of this budget, because there is a chance that if we did pass it out, that the House might concur with it. Which, because the version is, at least the published version, is quite similar to the House version.
Identical.
I was trying to be. And My concern is that there may not be the votes on the Senate floor for either version. So I think there's still work that needs to be done. So,
because I come down, frankly, with Senator Nelson in wanting to see an increase in the number for the opportunity grants, if not the governor's level as close to it as possible. Or beyond, since there is increased revenue on the table.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question in that regard?
Yeah.
Because I'm not really too much into this tuition freeze thing. I don't really see that is going to be equal across the board, and I think it's money is better spent in the Oregon Opportunity Grant Program. But I know that that's out there. Could I ask if in the House budget that they passed this morning, if they considered that, is that part of their budget?
That would be in the Department of Higher Education budget. So there was no decision made regarding tuition levels at OUS.
Was there discussion about that, Mr. Bender?
There was a little bit of discussion about the question of that not being determined yet and some concerns about what would be done with tuition. But in the end, the subcommittee did vote to move the budget on to the full House Budget Committee without that decision having been voted on yet.
Mr. Chair, that would play into any decision I made on this budget as well, as I think other members of the committee feel. So yet another reason why we don't move it today.
Well, with that, we will, Mr. Bender, please carry on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to just briefly describe the materials that I've submitted to you this afternoon. There are a packet of materials, and on top of that, of these, is a memo from myself to you titled The LFO Recommendation for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, SB 5584. I would like to go through this memo with you because it contains a number, actually 8 recommendations that LFO would ask for your consideration. And as the chair clarified, what these recommendations cover is they cover all decisions that we anticipate on the budget, excluding the final funding level for the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So the types of issues that are covered here are technical adjustments, changes in the amount of funding for the actual administration of the agency as opposed to the amount of grant support that the agency provides, revenue adjustments, and the performance measures as well. Also in this pile of information is a printed version of Senate Bill 5527. This is not the bill before you today. You're in work session on 5584, which is a blank bill, but Senate Bill 5527 is the budget bill for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission as it was introduced. So with your, eventually when you do choose a funding level and you vote this bill out of subcommittee, you will be recommending amendments to make 5584 look of this structure, but of course with different numbers than you see on here. There's also a listing of performance measures that that are available for committee discussion. Behind the list of performance measures, there's a table that looks like this, which is a printout from the automated budget system known as the Orbitz budget system. This contains, you've probably seen this in other work sessions, but this contains or shows the various LFO recommendations and how they are entered into the state budget system. Please note, though, I do want to point out one thing on this particular handout. If you look at the first page of the handout, page 1 of 15, about two-thirds down the table, you see Package 200, Oregon Opportunity Grant, Serve All Eligibles, and you see there's an LFO recommendation there of minus $27 million. This was the recommendation that the House subcommittee approved. Again, you are not being asked to vote on this today, so in that sense, these numbers are inaccurate, but I'm not aware of any way to put together a table without having some number in there, so we can't put any number in there that would be what you would be voting on at this point. But this is just showing you what the House version looked like. Otherwise, all the changes in here are consistent with recommendations that we are proposing today. And then finally, there's a page at the bottom here that looks very similar to the list of performance measures, but it really isn't. And you can see that it has a different title. It's a performance measure data summary. And I'd like to get back to that a bit when we get to the performance measures after going through the memo itself. As I mentioned, Senate Bill 5584 is the blank budget bill that will be used as the vehicle for the Senate for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget. And what I've described here in my memo are recommended changes to the governor's recommended budget as printed. The governor submitted his budget to the legislature in December, and these are the recommended changes from that budget. We have been hoping in LFO this session that all of the presentations by the different analysts on different agencies are as standardized as possible, so that no matter which analyst you have or which budget you have, the presentation will be in a very similar manner. I don't know how successful that has been so far, and since this is my first time before you in work session, I just wanted to clarify something that I stress in work session, and I don't know if this, you've heard this from the others, but it really all turns out this way. In order for there to be, in the budget bill itself, there's very little information, unlike a statutory bill. It really just has very broad-based numbers. In order for it to be clear what it is you've approved and what your decisions are, we put the details of that information into a budget report. And the budget report has a very standard format, session after session after session. And that is, it identifies the changes that you have approved from the formal governor's recommended budget that was submitted prior to the beginning of session. So what this recommendation will do is it will focus on those changes. And what I will be asking you to do to start off is just to acknowledge that that will be your starting point. So even though the governor's recommended budget may have something that you don't like, we have to start there and then change from that point. So there's a clear record of where the subcommittee started, where it ended up, and how it got from one place to another. And that's how we explain the budget information to the agency, to DAS, and to the public. So that is the format of this particular recommendation. And what we are doing here is all of these, the details describe the adjustments to the governor's recommended budget as printed, and all recommended changes are shown to policy packages numbered 100 or above. There are a number of policy packages each session of the governor's budget that are called essential packages that are basically building up to an estimate of what it would cost the agency to continue doing what they were approved to do last session. Then there are policy packages that are numbered 100 or above and that allow the agency to do new things or to discontinue doing things that it had done previously. What these recommendations will be is for all of these policy packages, the recommendations will be to the policy package itself. If we have any changes to that base budget, they will be in packages that start with 800 and 800 series. The first recommendation, which is labeled 1 here on the memo, relates to a policy package that is in the governor's budget and is formally package 202, titled the Aspire Program. The governor has a recommendation that you increase the other funds expenditure limitation for the Aspire program by $597,052 in other funds and establish a new full-time position to assist in the administration of the Aspire program. What the Aspire program is it's a program that it doesn't provide student aid, but it helps high school students get information on the options available to them after graduation. This was the program, you may recall, that trains volunteer counselors who are then placed in high schools around the state to advise students on what their post-secondary options are and specifically to help them understand what types of financial aid is available to them if they choose to continue on at a community college or a four-year institution. This package was proposed by the governor with the intention of allowing an expansion in this program. The program is entirely funded by other funds. There are no general funds in this program, and the source of the funds are grants, donations, and a small amount of fees that are paid by the participating high schools. The grants and donations are primarily from the Federal AmeriCorps program, from the Oregon Community Foundation, and from the Ford Family Foundation. These are the three primary sources of funding for this program. We do recommend that you approve Package 202, but with modifications. And these modifications are at the request, actually, or are developed by the agency itself. Our recommendation, which is shown in bold a few lines from the bottom of the page, is that you reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $283,732, and you eliminate the added position, or the one FTE. One place that you may want to look at this and to see a little more information, or it might be a little clearer, is on this printout here from the Orbit system. If you look on page 6 of 15, you can see a description of what the governor included, the recommendation that we are recommending, and then what would be left in package 202 if you approve the LFO recommendation. There would still be $313,320 in other funds included in this package, but there would no longer be an additional position. The reason why the agency proposed this adjustment, and LFO is recommending it, is that the agency does not believe that the donations that will be available to run Aspire will be sufficient to finance the full package 202. And the adjustment brings the expenditures down to a level that can be supported by the expected donations and grants. So this, we believe, will make the budget more accurate. It represents an ability, or passing this would allow the agency to continue the Aspire program at the level that it is now through the next biennium. The program has expanded recently, and we still need something in a policy package in order to allow the expanded program to continue. I would note one more thing before you consider this recommendation, and that is, because this is an other-funded program, if it turns out that donations do turn out greater than we now expect, it is within the authority of the emergency board in the interim to increase the other funds expenditure limitation if the agency receives more donations and comes to the e-board with a request to be able to spend those donations.
Yes.
That being said, does the e-board have the authority to add a position at that time?
Yes.
Sure. Yes. Mr. Bender, could you explain to us the apparent discrepancy in what the agency believes the donations will be, donations and grants will be, and what the governor thought the donations and grants would be?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsitt, when the agency put this budget together, it was in the midst of very serious financial difficulty with the student loan program. The lion's share of the energies on the financial and program staff was being directed to managing the cash flows in that particular program aspect on a week-to-week basis, which diverted the resources that we had away from being able to better ascertain what the ongoing program level and resources were in the other activities of the agency. Once that issue with the student loan program was dealt with and resolved to the greatest extent possible, then we were able to focus on what the real financial situation was, both expenditure and revenues, and that's the reason why you see the revised budgets in front of you. Our agreement with the Department of Administrative Services and the governor's budget process was that it was a preliminary figure, and that the agency absolutely was committed to refining those numbers as soon as the resources could be redirected to that.
Would you like me to continue to number two?
Yes.
Not complete. Recommendation number two in the memo relates to another policy package in the governor's recommended budget, package 300, which is the Oregon Financial Aid Exchange, commonly called OFACS. The Oregon Financial Aid Exchange Program is a computerized data exchange and matching program that is used by institutions to match enrollment records of co-enrolled students for purposes of delivering financial aid. Very often these are students that are attending part-time at a community college and part-time at OUS or a four-year college. What package 300 would allow is for the agency to spend up to $37,244 in support of the system. This is a system that exists currently and may be expanded in the future. The funding for this would be contributions made by the participating schools themselves. So they would contribute to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, essentially, in some sense, contracting for these particular data services. We recommend approval of this package.
Okay. You want to go into three?
Sure.
I'll ask when we get through this entire process for a motion to approve the LFO recommendations at this point. Noting again for the record that we are not approving the package that actually includes the amount of the opportunity grants. We're just approving these adjustments. So.
Recommendation 3 refers to package 801, which in every state agency you should be getting a package 801 recommendation, and it will always be called the LFO analyst adjustments. And what you'll see in package 801 are adjustments that are being made across agency budgets in essentially every state agency budget. At this point, budgets that are coming forward should have two adjustments in package 801. One, to adjust the budgets for the revised AG rate, the Attorney General charge, because the Attorney General hourly charge is less than was budgeted for in the governor's recommended budget. And the second adjustment that you should find in package 801 when you are getting your LFO recommendations is an adjustment for the PERS contribution rate. When the governor submitted the budget back in December, the best estimate was that the PERS contribution rate would be 15.52% of salary costs. And that is the funding that is in the governor's recommended budget for all state agencies. But since that budget was submitted, the PERS board has established what the actual PERS contribution rate will be for the 05-07 biennium. And the rate will actually be 14.63% of salary. What this means is that there's an overfunding of PERS contribution costs in all state agency budgets, and that the costs will actually be less than what the budgets are allowing for. So for this particular budget, we recommend that the subcommittee reduce the amounts in the budget that are not needed to pay PERS contributions, because the rate will be 14.63% and not 15.52%. What that amounts to is, in total, a general fund reduction of $7,718 and an other funds reduction of $17,705. And those reductions throughout the various parts of the agency budget and by fund type are detailed in the chart that's in the middle of page 2 of the memo. But that is a recommendation that we make. There is no specific recommendation here for Attorney General charge changes, even though I just mentioned that that should be there. And the reason why it's not there is you will see in Package 811 when we get to it that there's been a re-estimate of what all of the costs for the agency will be, and there's a much greater reduction in Attorney General funding than simply the rate reduction would allow. We've put all of the reduction for AG in Package 811, and it's just the PERS reduction that remains here in 801. But we would ask you to approve Package 801.
Okay.
The next item is a package that will also be in many of the agencies that you work on, though perhaps not everyone. And this is Package 802. And what Package 802 is it is it's always called Ways and Means Adjustments, and it includes LFO recommendations for the base and essential packages, so those are the things under 100 and in the base budget, that are specific to the state agency that you're working on and are not spread out and being done across the board. The ones that we are asking you to approve here in Package 802 are actually contain three elements. And they all relate to revenue changes. So this refers to changes in revenues that are available. And the essence of the package recommendations are to adjust expenditures to reflect revisions in what the revenue projections are. The first adjustment that we are recommending within Package 802 is that you revise the federal funds expenditure limitation to parallel the changes in federal funds revenue projections. The federal funds that come to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission are all used for one purpose. They are all used for opportunity grants, and they are combined with the general fund and lottery funds that you approve in order to finance the awards that go to eligible students. There was in the governor's budget, or I should say there is in the governor's budget, about $3.1 million of federal funds that were anticipated to be received by the state for distribution as opportunity grants. The name of the federal programs that supply this money, kind of unusual names, but the acronym is they're called the LEAP program, L-E-A-P, and the SLEAP program, S-L-E-A-P. And these are programs that are available that provide funds to all states, I believe all 50 of them, but at least all states that have student aid programs based on needs similar to our opportunity grant. We are recommending that you reduce the federal funds expenditure limitation by half, which is a reduction of $1,051,930, because unfortunately we now project that the federal government will provide funds for the opportunity grant for only one of the 2 years of the upcoming biennium. And it does appear in the budget process that there is not going to be funding for, that they're eliminating funding for the LEAP and the SLEAP programs entirely. And what this means is that we would still receive funding from last year's allocation, but the allocation for the budget that Congress is working on now would not include funding for LEAP and SLEAP. So we are recommending that federal funds expenditure limitation reduction. Again, this case is very similar to the case where we were talking about Aspire earlier. This is simply a limitation that you're placing on the amount of federal funds the agency may spend. If it turns out that Congress does end up approving more money for LEAP and SLEAP than now appears to be the case, the agency will have the ability to come to the emergency board, and the emergency board would have the authority to increase the federal funds expenditure limitation to allow any unanticipated federal funds to be spent on opportunity grants. So this is not an irrevocable decision, but we recommend it because the budget should accurately reflect what the revenue projections are at the time that it is passed.
When, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Ms. Render, when does Congress finally get around to approving these budgets?
That varies, and sometimes
their own time is what
it is. Sometimes I know that the federal government operates on emergency basis because they can't agree, but it varies, so this could be in the fall, it could be...
It could be in the
January.
Fall. It could be. It would most likely be in the fall at some time.
Okay.
But the agency would have would basically have the whole interim in which to request a federal funds expenditure limitation increase if it became known to it that the state would receive more federal funds and this limitation would allow them to spend.
Okay.
I mean, our recommendation is that you allow the agency to spend every dollar that it can get from the federal government for this program, and that is what this recommendation would do. Given what we are expecting the dollars to be, it would allow them to spend every dollar that they would be expected to receive.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Thank you. Here I think it's important that we communicate to our congressional delegation concern about the loss, demise of these programs. Possibly that concern has already been expressed. I don't know. By others in this body, if that hasn't occurred, I would certainly recommend it. Another example of a federal government that's off fighting a war, an unjust one at that, and putting funds that should be coming back to our states in the form of education, housing, other services. We could just make up a list, and we're seeing the cutting back of all these programs in pieces, and this is just another example, and I'm very troubled by that. I think we should express our concern to our congressional delegation about the loss of these programs. That's a request.
I think we can discuss that and see what form that could take. I mean, I don't know if there would be agreement on the committee. It's probably an issue that you could approach in the sense of a letter from Senate members and see how many Senate members would be willing to sign. Of course, you haven't touched upon, you're talking just about those two programs, but there's the larger issue, which we think will be turned back, about Pell Grants in general. Right now. But weighing in on that issue probably has much more significant impact than actually these two issues also. That
well,
issue.
As I said, there's a whole list of programs that we're losing within the state. All the states are being affected by other decisions that are being made about fighting a war versus investing in our communities and investing in the infrastructure that supports our communities, infrastructure including education. So I'm making a political statement. I'm aware of that. But that's why I'm here.
Okay. And along those lines, I think we can talk about what we can do in that regard, but it probably would be up to individual Senate members whether they would want to sign on. I think it is kind of interesting, I don't understand this entirely, but on the Pell Grant side, that we talk about modeling the Opportunity Grant after the Pell Grant, then should the federal government eliminate the Pell Grant because we think it's such a good program, it's kind of ironic. But my understanding now, and I'm getting shaking heads, is they're getting a lot of pushback from Congress on elimination of the Pell Grant. So, yeah. Mr. Bender.
The next recommendation, this is still part of this particular package, and we're still talking about revenue adjustments, but I'm now on page 3 of my memo. At the top of that page, another expenditure change that we recommend to parallel a change in revenues is we recommend that you increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation by $766,429 to reflect an equal or parallel an equal increase in lottery revenues that will be available for the opportunity grant. I do want to make a little detour here and explain this recommendation in a little more depth because it actually is very unusual. The lottery funds that come into the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget are dedicated by law. They are not your regular lottery funds of the type that you are allocating for other purposes. By law, 25% of the earnings in the Education Stability Fund are dedicated to opportunity grants and are appropriated to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. These are the lottery funds that are combined with the federal funds that we were just talking about and with the general fund in order to finance the awards. It turns out that the current, the May forecast has the earnings, these earnings, equaling $766,429 more than was anticipated back in December when the governor put his budget together. The LFO recommendation is to increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation so that all of these earnings can be spent on opportunity grants. Typically, if there's an increase in a revenue source, such as lottery funds or such as general fund, as you know, LFO does not come in and recommend increases on that basis. The co-chairs are looking at balancing the budget, and they look at the combination of general fund and lottery funds and make their decisions based on that. So if there was a lottery fund increase, we wouldn't say anything, but because in this particular case, these are an unusual type of lottery funds that can only be used by law for the opportunity grant, we are recommending that you increase the expenditure limitation because otherwise these additional funds could not be used and would not be available for any purpose at all. However, because you're increasing the lottery funds, we recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriation by the same amount so as not to violate the total amount of lottery and general funds that the co-chairs are working in order to balance the budget. When you reduce the general fund, then there are $766,429 that can be used for whatever other purpose the legislature chooses to use them for.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Bindruth,
yes.
And members of the committee, that would be found money then, correct?
This would be additional resources that were not anticipated.
And all within bounds of the law. Okay, that's great. And that's the purpose of the fund, correct?
That is the purpose of this recommendation, to allow those additional lottery funds to be spent and thereby to free up general fund. And those recommendations together are the recommendations involving expenditures for Package 802.
Okay. Package 811.
Package 811... operations expenditure reductions is a package we are asking you to approve, and what this package includes are reductions in expenditures for the administration of the agency. These are expenditures that essentially were proposed by the agency itself in Phase 2 in the Ways and Means public hearing process. The governor had, when he put his budget together, noted that the loan program functions were being eliminated for this agency. and the loan program had generated revenues that had been used to support a number of costs. What the governor did was he substituted general fund for these costs, for these revenue, for the loan program revenues that were no longer going to be there, for the portion of costs that were going to be continuing on, because the agency was going to continue with these particular functions even after devolving the loan program. The agency then, this was done primarily as a placeholder to make sure, to ensure that there were general fund available in this budget and that you would not come to this point in the session and only determine at this level that you, the agency needed additional general fund that had not been put in there. The agency, however, went through a review of its expenditures. The executive director had referred to that earlier today in some of her testimony and came forward with a revised budget based on the expenditure levels that were actually occurring. And the LFO recommendation is to reduce the general fund appropriation by a total of $766,098 and to reduce the other funds expenditure limitation by $10,860 to eliminate two positions and to reduce funding for two other positions, a total reduction of 2.65 FTE. There are a number of components of these rather large numbers. One of them is shown in the table on page 3 under services and supplies. These services and supplies reductions are exactly what the agency proposed. There are no changes here in what the agency had proposed. And these reflect reduced costs of services and supplies and of state government service charges. So you can see reductions there. There are also some shifts of costs from general fund to other funds where that is possible. Another component of that, or the other component of that total, involves reductions in the personal service costs. Those are costs for salary and benefits for personnel in the agency. The reductions are shown in the table and amount to an additional over 202,000 in general fund and 49,000 in other funds. The personal service adjustments are not exactly identical to what the agency proposed. There's some differences in fund splits, but we have talked to the agency and they do understand the approach that LFO took, and the total amount really isn't different. It's just a bit, there's some difference in how the fund splits are adopted. But there are the components of the personal services reductions are three. There is an elimination of some positions. There are reductions in other positions. And then there's the shifting in funding of some of the remaining, not certainly not all, but some of the remaining positions. I have some more detail of the on page 4 of which positions we recommend and the agency concurs with eliminating. There are two positions in the grants and scholarship division. The next two positions would be full-time positions that would be converted to part-time, and the last position in the Office of Degree Authorization would not be reduced, but there are anticipated to be vacancy savings because that position is anticipated to be vacant for about 6 months in the upcoming biennium, and this would capture some of those authorities in the budget to spend funds for that particular position.
Mr. Bender, would it be fair in terms of this to say that we're actually in the process of evaluating the direction the agency is going because they've been under such a major transition over the last year, trying to evaluate what their basic requirements are, and if the director might want to comment on her agreement or lack of agreement with this recommendation. I think it is agreement.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Margie Lau, Student Assistance Commission. Mr. Chairman, the modifications that are being recommended by Mr. Bender are ones that were largely initiated by the Student Assistance Commission staff. This is something that I've worked closely with all of the managers at the Student Assistance Commission to review. to make sure that what we're bringing forward to you is really what the costs are that the agency needs to move forward. Not anything that's going to be too thin, but also not anything that's going to have any extras in it as well. We want to make sure that the resources that we have are being directed to aiding students, not towards building administrative structures.
Any questions? Thank you. Number six.
With those five recommendations, if you vote to approve them, that would contain actually all of the expenditure changes that we're recommending today, because we are not going and talking about the total funding level for the opportunity grant. There are, however, three remaining recommendations that do not affect expenditures, but deal with other issues. And recommendation six is the first of those three. What we are requesting is now acknowledgement of some changes in revenues and fund balance amounts. We are requesting that the subcommittee acknowledge revised beginning balance and revenue projections. And I do want to note that this is a situation where formally in this bill you're not approving these at all. So this is not an action of you approving something or causing something to happen, as it is with the case of the expenditures. Instead, we wish to have you acknowledge that we have presented this information to you so that it can be placed in your budget report, because revenue and beginning balance adjustments are typically shown in the budget report as part of the formal report of the subcommittee. So I'd like to talk a bit about these in depth. First of all, in terms of the revenues, some of this is going to sound like I'm repeating myself, and it is, but we're recommending that you show that lottery revenues are increased and that the federal funds are reduced by the amounts that we talked about back in Package 802. The reason why I'm repeating this is recommendation in 802 was to talk about changing the expenditures, but this is to show that the revenues are actually changing along with the expenditures. So those two you've heard about. There are two other revenue changes that did not affect expenditures, at least directly. So these I have not mentioned before, but one is that other funds, primarily from donations and grants, the revenue forecast is down about $399,476 from the level in the governor's budget. And that is primarily due to reduced expectations of funds for the Aspire program, but this is a net figure for all of the other funds, basically, that the agency is receiving from operating Aspire, from operating its private awards program as well. Another revenue reduction is a small reduction in interest income that we recommend that you acknowledge a reduction of $21,690. These adjustments will change the amount of revenues that are projected in the state's budget system to the current projection level. Larger changes are being discussed here in terms of the beginning balances. The beginning balance in the grants and scholarships program area, excluding Aspire, would be increased by $25,514 because current projections show that there will be more funds. Again, these are primarily, though not exclusively, from the private awards on July 1st than we thought there would be at the time the governor put his budget together. The big change is that the beginning balance for the Aspire program would be reduced by over $1.5 million, which is equivalent to actually eliminating that beginning balance. There is a beginning balance in the governor's recommended budget for Aspire of $1,547,375. That is not going to be there On July 1st.
Mr. Bender, we explained this in a previous meeting, I believe, that the reason it's not going to be there.
Okay.
Did we not? That it's basically was never there.
Yes.
Forgive me if I'm having trouble following his accounting method.
Mr. Bender, if you might want to fill in on that just a bit.
The Aspire, there had over time a balance been built up in the Aspire program accounts. There's never anticipated to be expenditures of $1.5 million that will now be unable to occur. But the accounting had shown that revenues from donations and grants were greater than actually had been occurring, and a balance had, because the revenues weren't there and the expenditures hadn't been spent, a balance had built up over time, whereas in actuality, under that program, they do not maintain a balance, but costs are reimbursed as they occur, and there is not a balance that is maintained. It looks like other people want to talk about this.
Basically, my understanding of it, Senator Whitsitt, is that they counted what they believed would be their donations and grants, not what they actually received in donations and grants. And maybe the director might want to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I think the focus of the previous folks who were managing the budget at the agency had been more on making sure that the agency was not overusing its expenditure limitation or actual received revenues. And so I think this higher amount was put in there with an idea that maybe someday that would be realized, but that the various levels of grants that have been won and such, although there were increases, were not anywhere close to the larger quantity that very broad brush strokes that they had used in putting the initial agency request budget had anticipated. And, you know, I think their focus, again, in that era was really on the loan program. And as long as it was not overspent, they felt that it was not an issue.
Mr. Chair, in the private sector, at first blush, that would be a criminal action.
Depending upon how it was represented, it might be. Well, in terms of, I'm just agreeing, because he's citing an example that does exist, in the sense of in the private sector, you're referring to somebody presenting assets that you did not actually have. But in this case, I believe it was in essence that, because your focus was on the loan program, and it wasn't your focus because you've been the director since January.
Correct.
The focus was, and the numbers were put in there as the expenditure limitation because you anticipated, or someone anticipated, that that might be the maximum that you received through grants and donations, but you never came even close to that number.
And Mr. Chairman, I don't even believe it was included as actual expenditure limitation.
Oh, okay.
I think it was just a number that was plugged in there in terms of expected revenue. But, you know, 10 years ago, we didn't spend a lot of energy looking at revenue. But in our much leaner times now, all beginning and ending balances receive a great deal of scrutiny. And so in our new era, we'll make sure, and these budgets that we have proposed to you are based on very realistic projections, not somebody's much more wishful aspirations.
Do you want to add to the...
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from DAS. I think Ms. Lowe has explained the situation. I think we had some inexperience in the budget staff at the time this occurred. That's been remedied. I think we know some areas where we need to do some additional training. There never was a situation where expenditure limitation was established this revenue. There's never an attempt or an opportunity really for them to expend it. It was a mistake. We believe we've caught and have the situation such that won't reoccur.
Are you done with six?
Yes, except note that there's also a beginning balance adjustment in the Office of Degree Authorization, where that balance is reduced $49,000. So that's basically pretty much eliminated there.
Number 7, the Jobs Plus program.
Number 7 does not involve any expenditure authorities that you would authorize, but there was considerable discussion in Ways and Means about the Jobs Plus program. And the quote concerns that the benefits that clients are eligible for in terms of finance for education costs were not being utilized by the clients or made actually available to them. So what we're recommending is that we're recommending the following budget note to express subcommittee concerns about the Jobs Plus program and the way that program is operating. And if I just may read this,
yes.
Is that okay? Thank you. The subcommittee finds that the education benefits available to Jobs Plus program participants through the individual education account are underutilized. The individual education account is the component of the Jobs Plus that actually provides funding for participants' education costs. The Oregon Student Assistance Commission and the Department of Human Services shall jointly report to the Emergency Board no later than April 30th, 2006, on their efforts to improve the utilization of available education benefits by Jobs Plus participants. The report shall include any changes they have implemented to support this effort and the results of these changes to date. The report shall further describe any additional proposals to improve utilization of the available education benefits, including any suggested statutory changes requested for that purpose. So if they conclude that they need some statutory changes, this budget note would indicate that that should be a part of their report, as well as a report of what they've done to date and what they're planning to do even without statutory changes.
Yes.
Senator, within that, those $9.5 million roughly that have been collected over the years for that Jobs Plus education program, it's my understanding that there's about $2.6 million of that is allocated this year to the Department of Human Services for their administrative costs. Is that still in the budget in that way?
Yes,
and if so, why?
Was a component in the governor's budget that was based on historic rates at which the benefits were not claimed and therefore available for other purposes. There is also $300,000 in the governor's budget and in the LFO budget as well for the opportunity grant, which is the component of Jobs Plus funds that are transferred to OSAC, but then are not claimed by the participants. Those non-claimed funds have been rolled over into the opportunity grant. If indeed more of these clients do choose to utilize their education benefits, there will be less than the $2.6 million available that is currently in the budget for DHS, and there won't be $300,000 that would be available for the opportunity grant. There would be whatever is left after the claims are made. Part of the problem, or at least the potential problem, is that these funds are used for other purposes when they are not used by the clients. And it is important to make sure that the agencies that can use these funds for those other purposes continue to have an incentive to try to get the funds used for the purpose for which they were intended, and not to use them for other purposes. So even though using these funds to help the opportunity grant may be a good use of the monies, they are certainly not the primary intention of those monies. So the intent, this budget note will have both of these departments report back on what they are doing to increase utilization.
Is there a similar note, Mr. Chair, on the Department of Human Services budget?
We will be recommending an identical note in the Department of Human Services budget as well.
Seems like there's an additional exploration that needs to take place, and that is removing the program from the Department of Human Services and putting it into the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
There is, my belief in this is the budget note is your first step, basically, to put the agency on notification that we're looking at this very carefully. If you actually wanted to adjust this number and not reserve that amount for the Department of Human Services that the governor's reserved based on expectations, budget you would do it in is the Department of Human Services budget. Transferring a function between agencies, I don't think is something that we literally can, is a policy issue and probably is not something that we can actually accomplish in the limited duration left in this session.
Question for Mr. Bender.
Yeah.
It's my understanding in the 2003-05 biennium, there was about $2.1 million was transferred to Department of Human Services Administration. Was that the first time that that had occurred?
I'm sorry, I do not know the answer to that question, and I can try to ask my colleague who does the DHS budget if I can. I just don't know that, I'm sorry.
We'll get that answer for you. It wouldn't surprise me that it was, because how creative we became in the last couple of sessions looking for revenue any place you could find it. It wouldn't surprise me, but we can get that answer.
Well, it's kind of unclear to me or where it was, as I understand it, Ms. Lowe got some of the figures for us. There's about $9.5 million rough figures that they've collected over the years, and there's 4.7 that would go to the Department of Human Services. About $1.5 million has been transferred to the Opportunity or to the OSAC, in which about $750,000 has ever made it back to the individuals. And that leaves a giant hole in the amount of money that is accounted for there. And I don't know how much is still in that that hasn't run its five-year course yet. That's the one answer I don't know. Thank you.
Well, just to get back to the point I was making, Mr. Chair, this budget note does say that the two agencies will look at suggested statutory changes. And so I want to be on record as saying that they should specifically look at the possibility of shifting the program from the Department of Human Services to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, that they should look at that possibility and come back to us and talk about pros and cons.
Senator Gordley, I don't see any problem with including the record of that suggestion in this budget report. I do not know what the practicalities are in terms of jobs plus being clients of the Department of Human Services, the parties utilizing it, being clients of the Department of Human Services. We're already talking in one area about doing this, but it's quite different, and that is in the area of some of the assistance for child care, where it might be better off, I believe there's a bill to do this, where it might be better off handled through the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. I'm not prejudging your suggestion at all. I'm just saying that we can put it in the record of the budget report, and just this indication in case that there is some concerns by the committee about how the dollars are being utilized or whether they're being utilized for their original intent.
Which is education. But we have heard that the dollars get used for other purposes.
Yes.
Outside of education.
At this point, we also now have the performance measures. Have you concluded that section?
Yes.
Okay. You might start into the performance measures and indicate that there have been some major modifications.
Yes.
And some of them are relative to no longer having the loan program, and other of them are relative to what the commission actually has control over. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm now looking at the list, the table labeled Legislatively Adopted Performance Measures 0507, which we will include in the budget report after you make the changes, approvals, or any changes to this list that we have here. These are a list that includes all of the existing performance measures for the Oregon Student Assistance Commission, which is to say those that were approved in 03-05, and deletes a large number of them. And as the chair mentioned, most of those that are deleted are those that relate to, if you look at the second to the rightmost column, the guarantee services and default prevention, that is the entity that had previously administered the Family Federal Education Loan or Federal Student Loan Guarantee Program. And since that program no longer exists, those and the claims and collections performance measures are all recommended to be deleted. There's an additional one that's being recommended to be deleted, the first one that doesn't fall into that category, which is just the percentage of eligible students who are awarded an Oregon Opportunity Grant. That is recommended to be deleted, since that is not something that's really under the agency's control, but is rather a function of the budget and the support dollars that are provided to the agency.
My understanding that although this is deleted, aren't there measurements within the Oregon Progress Board that would still report on these issues, where they would still be reporting on some of the issues that we've identified here? I mean, there is clearly a reason here, because the commission does not have the authority to actually control either one of these numbers. It's the legislature and the governor that has the authority to change these numbers, in the sense of the percentage eligible being covered is dependent upon the appropriation by the legislature. So,
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what the Progress Board's performance measures are. I think the ones that the Progress Measure actually tracks are actually the ones that are listed at the top of the page in terms of numbers 24, 25, and 26.
Right.
So they're broader measures. We think that the amount of assistance that and the number of students who are able to receive that assistance are very much related to the achievement of the measures that are above. But I don't think the Progress Board has a more detailed measure.
Clarification?
Yes.
Whose recommendation is it to delete that first goal? Is that coming from the agency?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, it was our understanding from the budget note that we received in the 2003 session that that particular legislative body didn't want us to use that measure. Again, viewing it as not really a measure of the decision-making and administration that's done by the commission itself. Our commissioners consider it to be an important measure in terms of well-being for the state as a whole, and so they don't have an objection if we wanted to continue to measure it, recognizing that it's really a measure of the system,
exactly,
not of just one player.
I would object to deleting that goal.
Senator Gordley, the issue there, though, would be is, do they actually have any control over reaching a goal? I mean, it's actually the people that are here on this side of the table that actually have the ability to reach that goal or not reach that goal.
That's right.
They do not.
Well, it's still a measurement of the progress. It's our progress together with the agency. For example, we have a goal that says we will fund all pre-K eligibles by, 2004-2005. We're not going to make it, but it doesn't mean that we're going to remove the goal. It needs to remain as a target. And again, I'm not understanding why we would want to remove.
I think you might have the same comment about goal 1B too.
Yes.
To be honest.
Absolutely.
So,
if you might want to comment on that one also, and then we'll go back to Mr. Bender.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, I think the Commission's view is that these are both important measures. They're certainly measures that Oregon is evaluated on nationally. They're the things that we read about when we read about overall competitiveness of various states and the well-being of their educational systems. Whether the Student Assistance Commission monitors that or we just have an awareness of how we're being monitored in this broader national marketplace in which we compete for students and economic progress, you know, I'm flexible about that. But I think all of us understand that we are all being evaluated on both of these measures.
It might also be something, too, Senator Gordley, that if we were to retain, and that's probably a discussion we need to have with the chair, if there's more people, including yourself and others, that would want to retain those, that there's always going to be some recognition, hopefully, by the body that's here, that the commission doesn't actually control the attainment of that goal. And it's to this side that does. We might retain it, but when we're reviewing how well you've done, we will actually be reviewing how well we have done.
Absolutely.
So I think what I might want to do today in regard to this is that on the performance measures, because I can sense that there is a little bit of dissension on this, and I don't know if there's going to be dissension on other items in the performance measures, to actually go through them all. But then when we come back, we'll probably see if we can approve all the other LFO recommendations at this time, with the exception of the performance measures, and still keeping on the record that we are not approving the amount for the opportunity grants nor their distribution formula. So with that, do you want to proceed, Mr. Bender?
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
And I can take up the issue Senator Gordley has brought up with the chair.
Great. I'd be happy to join you in that.
Yes. Okay. But we can't talk public safety. This is an inside joke. We're the quorum on the public safety.
Mr. Chair, members, goal number three is the percentage of growth in the number of privately funded scholarships awarded. And I believe that this is actually a small modification from what the agency is currently tracking, in which they are tracking the dollar total of the scholarships that are being awarded, as opposed to the number of scholarships that they are administering. The remainder of the measures on page one of this table are again relating to the loan program, and we do recommend that you delete them. There's no point in continuing them. Then on page two, there is a recommendation for the time to complete a program review in the Office of Degree Authorization. I forgot to put in the 2006 target, but that was also 4.5 months as the 2007 target was. So if you approve, they will continue to monitor this activity of the Office of Degree Authorization as a performance measure. There are a number of added performance measures, many of them that came at your requests or at the requests of the co-chairs. The measure that's listed here as number eight would be a ratio of administrative dollars to private and public scholarship dollars awarded to students. The target would be that there would be $11.38 actually going to students for each dollar that the agency is spending to administer its both its public scholarships, such as the Opportunity Grant, as well as its private scholarships, such as its private award programs. Another added performance measure would be the number of detrimental duplication issues resolved by the Office of Degree Authorization. The office is required under statute or charged under statute with resolving cases in which an independent college finds that a proposed program offered by a publicly supported college is detrimental to its ability to offer these services. And we see that the performance target is that there would not have to be any of these issues that would actually reach the point where ODA would resolve them, and that resolution could be achieved earlier than ODA intervening in these cases. The next performance measure is the percentage of new program proposals requiring ODA involvement. And I am afraid I'm drawing a blank right now as to which programs we're talking about. Are these the new programs offered private institutions? Is this what we're talking about?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Alan Contreras, Administrator of the Office of Degree Authorization. This also refers to the proposed new programs at public institutions.
Okay.
Against which there might be an objection from a non-public institution. In effect, you have two performance measures approaching that question from a slightly different angle, which may generate different information both for us and for you folks.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
Is there, if the numeric target is zero, should the percentage target also be zero?
What we tried to do, Mr. Chairman, in thinking about this set of issues is come up with a way of recognizing that in a perfect world, the communication between sectors would be so good and our initial mediation efforts would be so instantly effective that you would never have a case that had to go all the way through this complex process. We thought that because it is possible for us to determine exactly how many new program proposals come out of the public sector schools each year, for example, in the community college sector, I think it was about 25 this past year, and there'll be fewer than that in OUS. We can generate an actual number there, and it's sometimes helpful to have an actual number against which to measure how many cases. I mean, if we have two cases out of 30, that tells you something different than if we have two cases out of 12 that actually go all the way through that process. But as a purely practical matter, because of the way that these issues are dealt with these days, there just aren't very many cases. I mean, I've only had 11 inquiries in the last 3 or 4 years, and only one of those got to the point where it almost had to have a hearing before the commission, and it was settled the night before that hearing. So this is something that used to be a major issue between the sectors in Oregon, but now, owing largely to better communication, it just doesn't come up very often. And we're willing to do the evaluations any way you want, but there aren't going to be very many cases.
No, it does clarify. I'm just a little concerned that there's a inconsistency between having zero for one and 2% for another. Perhaps the percentage should also be 0%.
I'm perfectly comfortable with that if that's the way you want to do it. You're just never going to see more than one or two in a year. I'd be astonished if you did.
We can explore this a little bit more before this comes back for approval. So.
Yeah.
Proposed performance measure, which is here labeled 11, would be the number of degree validation cases resolved by the Office of Degree Authorization. Performance measure number 12 is a complex one that we do not have a specific proposal to measure this to bring forward at this time. So we recommend that you approve this on a development basis with a requirement or direction to the department that they propose a specific measure designed to measure the impact of opportunity grants on the enrollment of eligible students to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for its approval no later than August 1st of 2006. The reason, well, a little explanation here, is that most of the measures, LFO's had some discussion with the agency on this, and the director may wish to comment further, but most of the proposals, in order to analyze what the impact of the opportunity grant on enrollment of eligible students has been, have been based on comparing either enrollment or persistence rates of those students who are awarded the opportunity grant and to those students who are eligible but are not awarded. This is the 30 to 35% for whom the funds run out. And if either the governor's proposal is approved by this body or the co-chair's proposal or some other proposal is approved that essentially eliminates cases where you have people who are eligible but are not receiving the award, it becomes that type of method cannot be used in order to compare those two, and another method has to be developed.
Mr. Chairman,
please identify yourself again.
Marty Lau with Student Assistance Commission. I have had the benefit of having in another agency a lot of experience in negotiating and reporting and hitting targets for performance measures. So I've had the advent of knowing where to negotiate and where not to. In other areas in human services where I had done this, where our comparison group is vanishing, what we would do, because usually you didn't want to, if you found a project to be effective, you didn't want to withhold that from a portion of the population who was eligible in order to just be able to continue to observe differences in outcomes between one group and another group. So in those instances, we would use the historic experience of the non-participant group prior to implementation where all eligibles were going to be able to be served. So that would be my recommendation. In the measure that Steve is referring to in terms of number 12, this is an area where we're posed with some additional challenges in that it's hard for us to know what happens to students who do not have a grant award that they receive. We can hopefully find them somewhere within the Oregon system if we develop a master list and send it out to each of the three post-secondary education sectors. But for students who choose to go out of state or for students who don't enroll at all, it's hard for us to know where they go, because if they're not receiving assistance in any way from the agency, we don't know what happens to them. So as Steve and I had brainstormed about how we would approach this particular measure, that's our greatest limitation is we hope that there's some way in which we can go to a national database in which to get some of this information, particularly for students who opt to go out of state to continue their education. But in order for us to use that database, we incur a charge of 25 cents for each record we ask them to match. So that would be an additional administrative cost to be able to discern what's happening.
That's one of the things that, if should we keep this when we vote on this, that you're going to have to explain to the audits committee in the interim.
And Mr. Chair, in our very reduced budget proposal, we've not left a lot of resources to purchase external evaluation or research, and so that's one of those things that we would ask the committee to consider, is if you want us to do more research in this area, which we think definitely has some value, it would be one of those things that potentially is a need for an augmentation.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Proposed measure 13 would be to compare the persistence rates over 4 years for students at four-year institutions who are eligible and awarded an Oregon Opportunity Grant versus eligible non-recipients. again, I think there are some similar problems here to what we were discussing earlier, in the sense that the non-recipients, people who are eligible, may all become recipients depending upon various budget proposals that are before you today or this session. But this shows a comparison. For example, the agency has identified a target that 73.8% of the Oregon Opportunity Grant recipients would persist or stay in school for 4 years, compared to 40.1% of students with the same financial need but who have not been awarded the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So this would show a target of increased persistence as a result of receipt of the grant. I do need to mention to you that the House Budget Chair is concerned at these target levels are too low, because the target amount of 73.8% is actually lower than recent history has shown, even though the history is not on this chart here before you, but the 73.8% is actually a reduction, and the House Budget Chair asked you to consider raising that target.
Please proceed. Understanding committee that almost everything, even though we're not acting on these performance measures today, I think there's a general recognition in this that OSAC will be dealing with the audit committee in the interim, and that this is basically, I mean, this whole agency has went through a transition, and most of these are new added performance measures, and they're going to go through a transition of developing performance measures, and hopefully when they come before a subcommittee next session, after they went through the audit committee, hopefully that subcommittee will keep the performance measures in place long enough so that we can actually get some reliable data. But I think what we will do with these performance measures is actually have more discussion on them before we come to a point of at least adopting them preliminarily, which we will not be doing today. So please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Proposed measure 14 is similar to measure 13, but instead of measuring persistence for 4 years, measures graduation within 6 years for the students at four-year institutions. So this is the rate of success in graduation. Measure number 15 is a similar measure that would be developed for community college students that would measure completion or graduated within 3 years for students at community colleges, those eligible and awarded the grant versus those eligible and not receiving it. This is developmental because the data for completion in the community college system is not as complete as the data for the four-year system. So this would require some development and a report to the JLAC committee for approval of whatever measures eventually developed based upon the data that is available.
Sure.
Yes.
Particularly on measure 15 with the community colleges, for that to be meaningful, we have to know how many of those students actually entered the community college with the desire to get an associate's degree, and how many entered for a vocational purpose or other purpose to just get a job skill and go on with their life. I think that's also true at the university level, but probably to a lesser extent.
There's also proposed to develop a measure of the effectiveness of OSAC's customer service, and you'll see there are some more specific measures toward the end dealing with that. Measure 17 is development of a measure of the percentage of students of color served by OSAC programs, disaggregated measures to track race and ethnicity of the beneficiaries of OSAC program services. This is also listed as a developmental measure. There are issues of data being available to OSAC. The data that OSAC has available to it on race and ethnicity of students who are in the Opportunity Grant Program is data that is provided by the institutions where the student enrolls. When OSAC receives the FAFSA form, the student aid form, that it uses to base its determination of whether a student is eligible for the grant or not, there is not any data on that form on the student's race or ethnicity. Once the student enrolls at an institution and then becomes eligible to receive the award grant, the institutions do ask the students to report this information, which most of them do, and then this information they then share back with OSAC. And so the source of the information is actually the institutions themselves. So there were, we had some discussions again with the agency on potential measures that might be helpful, and it turned out that there wasn't data available to do them. One thing that we discussed together was that we look at the proportion of eligible students in different racial and ethnic categories who are actually receiving an Oregon Opportunity Grant and compare that to what is happening statewide overall. The problem is, again, if someone does not receive the Oregon Opportunity Grant because they are not enrolled in an institution, then we have no way of knowing, or the commission has no way of knowing, what their race or ethnicity was. So there is a need to look further into this to develop some measures, and these would also be reviewed by JLAC during the interim.
The last measure is the standard.
The standard customer service metrics that we're adding to all state agencies.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. What we would hope to do today is, understanding that, to state it on the record again, we're not moving the budget out. We're not acting on package 200, which is actually the package that identifies the actual amount of opportunity grants. We're not acting on the performance measures. We will leave that to our next consideration. Hopefully I'll have some discussions with the chair and other members of this committee and to see that we can get to a point to adopt performance measures when we come back. But what we would ask for today is a motion to approve the recommendations in Mr. Bender's memo dated May 23, 2005, with the exception of recommendation 8, the approval of the performance measures as it can.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I probably should declare a potential conflict of interest. I have a daughter of college age.
Okay. Anything additional? Any objections to that motion? Hearing none, the motion passes. Also, Mr. Bender, is there anything more on this item? I should actually give the committee some information about tomorrow.
This item was also scheduled for tomorrow in case you needed time to carry over your work tomorrow. That, of course, is not necessary. There are other items on your agenda for tomorrow. There will be a work session on the Health Licensing Office and the Health Licensing Office fee bills, as well as a work session on a bill relating to the summer school lunch program.
And in terms of those tomorrow, you should have already gotten the report from Ms. Manthe on the Health Licensing Office. While some of the smaller commissions that we are considering, we may be making a decision later on whether or not their administrative support will be provided by the Health Licensing Office. What is before us tomorrow is simply the Health Licensing Office budget. That decision about whether they will provide administrative support to some of those smaller boards, licensing boards, will be made at a later date. So we're simply approving the existing health license, considering approval of the existing Health Licensing Office
The other bill that is before us is the school lunch program, basically implementing it for this summer. And that's a bill that we had hoped to actually schedule much earlier in the process, getting that we're getting very close to summer. It is not included officially in either co-chair's budget, because it is actually a policy bill with a fiscal impact. I have got an okay from the Senate chair to consider and pass out the item tomorrow. We have identified resources within other budgets to fund it. So, and I don't think that there's going to be a huge objection or any objection, really. I would hope that there would not be from the other side of the building, because everybody recognizes now that we need to get it approved before summer in order to, careful, I shouldn't say too much since it's not on the agenda, but in order to get it approved prior to it's actually going into the summer. With that, I will close the work session on 5584. And I know that Senator Walker will not be here tomorrow, but all the items on the agenda tomorrow will be action items. So I hope that we can all be in attendance tomorrow, and we will try to proceed as efficiently, effectively, and expeditiously as we can. With that, I'll close the meeting till tomorrow. 3:00.